At a cafe on the Tiergartenstrasse, women meet over Black Forest cake and Apfelstrudel, planning a film night for their chapter of the NS-Frauenschaft, the National Socialist Nazi Women's League. Outside the cafe, girls in pinafores, blonde braids bouncing, and boys wearing lederhosen pass the wide windows, returning from the Neue Deutsche Schule. Some of the youngsters look up to the sky in hopes of catching sight of the Zepp, the silver dirigible Graf Zeppelin, passing overhead. Newspaper vendors hawk German newspapers, and in an empty lot, very young boys wearing swastikas on armbands practice marching under the tutelage of teens from the Nazi Youth Club and the Gymnastics Society. Hitler's birthday is just around the corner. There will be parades. The party men will march in their uniform shirts, arms raised straight out before them, saluting like the Führer. Well, these moments on a Tiergartenstrasse might be unfolding in 1930s Germany, but instead, the afternoon scene is typical of a host of towns in southern Brazil, where a million ethnic Germans lived on the eve of World War II. Ethnic Italians and Japanese, too, resided in countries from Mexico to Argentina. As World War II loomed in Europe, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt's greatest fear was that fascist, especially Nazi subversion, in Latin America would threaten the security of the United States. Of 100 meetings of the Joint Planning Committee of the U.S. State, Navy, and War Departments in 1939 and 40, all but six had Latin America at the top of the agenda. Just as the tango can be danced fast or very slowly, even with one partner holding still while the other moves, the rhythm of the competition between the Allies and the Axis varied in each South American country, and the territory covered was vast. A distance of 6,640 miles from the Rio Grande border in Texas south to the Argentine Antarctic. To do justice to the subtle intricacy of the interlinked maneuvers of this deadly contest, I chose to present the elaborate story of World War II in Latin America in connected narratives, like tiles in a mosaic that, seen together, give a picture of the whole. At this distance in time, since we know the outcome of the war, it is difficult to imagine how strong the Reich was before 1943, how grievous a threat to the Allies, how unsure anyone was about which way the conflict would go. In the run-up to the war and during the hostilities in Europe and the Pacific, the Latin American region was up for grabs. And so, during the month when we remember the 100th anniversary of the ending of the first war to end all wars, today's book introduces us to a war-torn part of the Great War that is little known in this country. The war for the allegiances of the peoples and the governments of South America was one that seesawed dramatically between the Nazis and the Allies throughout the period that suffered from 1939 well into 1945. And as these true stories hint, it was a period that set up South America's many peoples and governments for the raucous 1950s, 60s, and even 70s that were to change so many of the region's decades-long institutions and cultures. This history of World War II, as told in The Tango War, is told through a series of chapters that attempt to make sense of the varied mosaic that was and is South America. The chapter titled The Prizes tell of the natural resources so important to the war effort, the oil and the rubber of the Southlands. And these chapters tell, too, of the oddly un-North American nature of pre-war South America. It was South America, after all. But it was also a time and a place where German and Italian pilots ruled the skies over the Southern Hemisphere. As our author tells us, it was easier for passengers from the Southern continent to travel to the heart of the German Reich than to the heartland of the United States. The Undesirables tells of little-known efforts to offer refugee to Jews, and the unexpected, to us today anyway, stories of Nazis and Nazi sympathizers who found their own lives in the South American landscapes, and the Germans, the many Germans, who, even if born in South America, were captured and taken back to concentration camps in North America during the war. The Illusionists tells of spies, seduction, and espionage. and strange and compelling these true stories are. We meet up with the spies who infested the South American cities and countryside, in pre-Castro's Cuba, in neutral Brazil, in Uruguay, in Nazi-inclined Argentina, with more than guest appearances by a younger J. Edgar Hoover, an intriguing discussion that teases apart the different motivations and actions of the German SS and the German Abwehr, as they both struggled, all too often successfully, to confuse and redirect the British and the U.S. spies who shared the continent's islands and mainland with them. But we learn in these chapters as well the successful efforts of Hollywood, led by the likes of the Walt Disney Studios, to familiarize, to familiarize North Americans with their southern neighbors and draw the two continents closer together in the war effort against the Nazis and the Imperial Japanese, even as both the Germans and Japanese offered their own cultural interloping efforts to win hearts, minds, and government support in the southern hemisphere of the Americas. The warriors tell of, well, those Americans, British, and other allies who fought the war against the Nazis largely on the seas, off the coasts, and of those South Americans who took themselves to Europe to fight for the Allies, in this case, the Brazilians in particular, who found themselves fighting the Nazis and the Italians on the Italian Peninsular Campaign. The Battle of the Atlantic, quote, the longest continuous military campaign of World War II from 1939 to 1945, began off the waters of Brazil. It would end on a dock in the River Plate between Uruguay and Argentina, an almost 3 months-long series of incredibly successful naval actions by the Germans that resulted in the ruin of many, many Allied battleships, but no casualties until the very end of that first set of battles. And before we wrap up, let me note that while Cuba, Brazil, and Argentina most often take center stage as the nations and the cities found in these pages, other peoples, other nations, take the stage as well. From the Catholic Church to the crusading reformist president of Mexico, President Cardenas, who comes into focus more than once in these pages. And the little-known aspects of World War II that took place in these many and varied Southern Hemisphere nations are here to surprise us readers, too. What we could only call the disgusting, war-long expulsion of Japanese settlers from Peru, at the insistence, we're told, of both the U.S. and the Peruvians, is explored. And the many efforts from before the war began, well into the depth of the war years as well, that were made by U.S. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt to keep the nations and the peoples of South America within the Allied camp rather than drifting into the Nazi camp are taken note of as well. Wrapping up this well-researched book at a lesser-known continent during what is arguably the greatest conflict of the 20th century, our author gives special thanks to the women and to public libraries in her acknowledgments chapter. We wrap up our story with the end without an end. Hints of the decades to come that were to result in the entanglement of South America with a long-lasting Cold War between East and West, shifting from that Allied versus Nazi to Russian versus Western. As our author Mary Jo McConaughey writes in her final concluding chapter, war once again has few limits in time or space, as these chapters show. During the years in which I examined the era of World War II in Latin America, I often thought of later wars I covered as a journalist in Mexico and Central America, and of the South American Cold War dictatorships. Some 400,000 persons died or disappeared in political violence in Latin American countries in the 1970s, the 1980s, most of them civilians, almost all at the hands of militarized governments supported by the United States. The fascists of Europe possessed characteristics in common with the authoritarians of Latin America. They defined groups as internal enemies, the enemy within. They tortured individuals to get information for punishment or for the pleasure of the torturers. And they tried to hide crimes of mass killings. They stole babies. They concentrated undesirables in camps and counted on collaboration from professionals, medics, psychiatrists. Hitler's secret night and fog decree of 1941, which ordered resistors of the Reich to be taken clandestinely and eliminated without a trace, as if swallowed by night and fog, prefigured the process that created thousands of Latin Americans disappeared by the 1980s. I wondered whether the horrors of World War II were connected to the spasms of terror that shook Latin states 30 years later. Or do tyrannies simply have similarities that mirror each other? Perhaps there is such a thing as a cycle of violence that inevitably repeats itself with shared characteristics, erupting here, then erupting there, never to be completely extinguished. I arrived at no definitive answers to these questions, our author writes, but I met individuals who considered them in thoughtful ways, including torture survivors, a forensic anthropologist, a pedagogical psychiatry educator, and a physician whose lifetime spanned Hitler's Reich and New World Fascism. Simply to listen to these folks was to feel a connection between the tyrannies. The Tango War, the struggle for the hearts, minds, and riches of Latin America during World War II, a story that begins in the late 1930s and carries on, as you just heard, well into the 1970s, the 1980s, arguably into today, in a shadow kind of war that so many of us know so little about, but which becomes, but begins to come alive within these pages. It's written by journalist Mary Jo McConaughey, and it's available at all of our fine local libraries, including the West Lafayette